extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeMars. And we have here today another amazing guest, Adriana Garcia, who has been an art therapist, clinical supervisor, currently entrepreneur of YouCreateArt.com. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Woo! So thank you for being here. So why don't you tell us a little bit to start out about your background. And a lot of people who are into art think, oh, I could be a starving artist or I could be an accountant. And you have found a way to be an artist and actually provide for your family as a single mom and move up the hierarchy. So can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, I did go to art school, and I spent many years doing some freelance work. And in that time, I realized that I also wanted to continue with my education. And I was fortunate enough to find a merge between what I felt I was good at, which was the art, as well as people. And I found what was called clinical art therapy. And it really spoke to me. It became a process for myself in learning how to use art as a healing process to work with children, to work with individuals. And I did that for many, many years, which in turn launched this new desire and like sparked this internal drive to move away from like the corporate part, kind of venturing out on my own.
What exactly does an art therapist do? Like, I come in and I am a woman who maybe is not super educated, super articulate. I have a small child. We've both been victims of really severe domestic violence, and then I'm in one of the centers you work with. So what do you do? Because I could not do your job because I would just come in and be kind of like, sucks to be you. Should have hit him with a brick. But I presume that's not what you do.
No. You know, art in and of itself is a great tool to kind of break down walls and barriers that people who have dealt with, abuse, neglect, difficulties in their lives. Sometimes coming to therapy in and of itself is very scary. And so as an art therapist, you learn how to help someone communicate without using the words in a, it's like you're moving through a different avenue of communication. So instead of, for example, say, hey, tell me how you feel, you might ask them to show you how they feel, and giving them, you know, either tools or clay, paint, sometimes markers, whatever it may be, someone may come from a different place to show how they emotionally feel versus to tell you in words. And I think it works really well with people who are young with children and people who have been abused who may not have the vocabulary to express that. So if I say, well, why don't you show me? And you say, okay, I'm gonna grab the color red and I'm gonna color some circles, or I'm gonna do something that is very cathartic and almost comes from a different place. Like it's not coming from your thinking, it's coming from more of your emotion. Then you interpret your art. Then I'm going to ask you, so tell me what it means.
Now, I'm someone that has zero artistic ability. So do you get people who come in and are like, I don't know if I can do this because I am not an art person whatsoever? And how do you kind of get them into the process? Because you don't have to be, Monet. Sure.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, every single person that I've ever worked with has said to me that they're not artistic. And so the point of art therapy isn't to produce a product that is beautiful and understand. It's really about that person's own internal perception of being able to externalize an emotion. So it's not about draw me a picture. It's not about it needs to look beautiful or perfect. It has to resemble something that you can make out of. Like, and I'm not telling you to draw me an apple and you have to sit there and try to draw. It really is an interpretive modality to elicit a deeper subconscious emotion. And so you may not, if I say, show me how that was for you. you might conceptualize it in color. And so you might tell me later when we're talking about your artwork that you made these strokes or painted in this color because it resembled fear for you or it resembled pain for you. And so it opens up an avenue to allow to talk about that without diving directly into. So you were, you tell me you were scared when you, you know, when your husband approached you or, you know, with a young child. Yeah, you saw mom and dad fighting and you became scared. They're using the art to open up that dialogue that is a lot less intimidating and scary to talk about.
Speaking of intimidating and scary, that's another thing related to your job. You worked a lot with families that were victims of domestic violence. Is that right?
Yes.
How do you deal with that and not burn out? I mean, you must have worked with a lot of children who were severely abused,
yes.
women who were repeatedly abused and went back to their abuser. How do you not take that home with you? I mean, you have a young son. I mean, not as young anymore, but, you know, you've had a young son during this whole career. How do you deal with working with people who've just had lives that are hard, I think, for a lot of people to conceptualize?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up because I learned very early in my career, and I think every new therapist goes through that phase of they want to help and save every person that they encounter. And it does, and it does wear on them. It's called vicarious traumatization. You become traumatized by the stories that you're told with through the families that you're seeing. So they'll tell you what happened to them, and it's very traumatic. But what I realized, and I really feel like I did this because I knew I had a young son at home, and I didn't want to bring the stories and the feelings and the emotions home. I had to leave it at work. I learned from very early on that I could not save every child I ran into or help every woman make the decision to either leave a relationship or to move forward in her life. My job wasn't to make those decisions for them. So I learned to just, you know, I had to walk away. And you always have to kind of process a little bit after you see someone with a very heavy story. But then you go home and it's your life. You really make that separation between work and home. And then you go home and you don't dump. You don't take out your, you know, emotional feelings on your children, your spouse, your other relationships. Work is work and home is home. And so when you learn how to separate that, you realize that your job isn't to rescue every child who's been abused. Your job is really to help them build the skills and the resilience to overcome their life situation. You can't pull that child or that person out of their situation unless they decide that that's what they want to do.
And I think to a much less dramatic extent, we run into the same thing with the populations that we deal with. You know, we make educational games and I'm one of the people that analyzes the data, and sometimes I'll look and see that, for example, that the average student before on the pretest, maybe the mean for the school is 30%, which is failing, right? And now it's 40%, which is still failing, but they've come up by a third, and you know, a larger proportion of the kids, maybe none of the kids were at the level they were passing the exams before, and now 20% of them are. And I think you have to focus on the best I can do for that kid who's in front of me. And that it's often, I always say, an iterative process that you help a little bit and maybe next year that kid will learn a little more, that mom will be a little closer to moving.
Yes. You know, as a supervisor, I really worked, and I use this as a metaphor, is as a clinician, your job is really to plant seeds. You plant the seeds and you hope that these seeds will germinate and grow and help give that person the skills, the tools, the resilience, and the desire to change their lives. And so that's really what a good clinician is they learn how to plant the seeds. And sometimes you never know how that's going to happen because it can happen years later. A child can be in treatment and go to therapy for maybe, you know, 3 or 4 months. And if with the right relationship and the right connection, it can be years later that they take what they've learned, that relationship, that one positive relationship with their therapist, and then, you know, have a learn how to have a good relationship elsewhere.
We'll be right back after this.
Did you know that 92% of U.S. homes have a computer? Yes. Yes, they do. And 43% of homes have a child under 18. Why aren't more kids playing educational games on those computers? Because they suck. The educational games, not the kids. Until now, download Spirit Lake or Fish Lake. Check out Forgotten Trail or Making Camp with no download required. All of our games are under $10. Teach math and social studies. Let your child play on a real computer and learn real-life math. If you're on Steam, be the coolest aunt, uncle, big brother, or sister on the block and download Fish Lake. The little rugrat can play on your computer, learn fractions, and you can get some peace while you talk on the phone to Vin.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars, and we still have with us our amazing guest.
Adriana.
And the second half of the podcast, I guess it's the second, third, we wanted to talk to Adriana about a big career shift she's made. So you spent a good number of years in about the most secure job you could get, right? You're a Los Angeles County employee. You started as an art therapist. You moved up to being clinical director, program director, Lord of the Dark Side. Mm-hmm. And then you took a complete turn of events, stepped off a cliff and said, I'm going to give up that monthly paycheck and pension, and I am going to start my own business, youcreateart.com. So tell us about your business, first of all, and then we'll ask you some more questions about how you decided to jump into that.
So with the roots that I, you know, come with being an art major and have been doing artwork my entire life, I've always used art as a way to kind of heal people and work through things. So I did take a leap of faith. I wanted to take it out of the mental health field and provide an art service and expand on that to kind of the communities that I currently live in. So I do Mommy and Me therapeutic workshops. We also do the healing art workshops where people come in, and if you're having, it can be like writer's block, or it could be, you know, artist block, or it could be an emotional block. And using our services, you can help get you to the next place. I also do a variety of parties. We do adult parties, and they're all art parties. So child parties, kid parties, we do craft parties. So I did. It was a very, it was a challenging decision to make. But I do agree, taking a leap of faith and kind of putting all of your faith in yourself and going for it is what I did.
And so it's kind of like an art therapist, the way that people go to other therapists sometimes in ways like that. I think you don't hear a lot about people saying, oh, I'm going to an art therapist, but kind of bringing it maybe more accessible, less from the clinical level and more to everybody.
Yes.
And then you also do the fun part of it. Like if you are a mom and you want your kids to get something for Christmas, which is not those stupid Lego toys that you step on in the middle of the night and go, ah! Oh, that's kind of loud for the podcast. I think that your idea of adult parties is really interesting too, because frankly, I know a lot of people who are not that extroverted and interesting, but they have parties and sometimes you go and they're like deathly dull. But you have to go because you know them, you work with them. Not anybody I know that's listening, but hypothetically, theoretically. So you kind of have something for everybody to do. So that's kind of fun. It's like the kid parties I had for my kids when they were little, but for adults.
Right. It's like art and wine, but you don't have to look and interpret art. You can actually make your own.
Right. So it is, and like what you said, I think it's not about, and I do have a lot of people saying, oh, I'm not an artist. I don't know what I'm doing. It's not about the product. It's about having a good time with your friends. It's about having something to do when you get together, you know, whether it's a dinner party or a, you know, set up specifically to do this art thing, and you have your food or your wine or your guests, and people engage in an activity. You engage in doing artwork. It's guided. I do step by step. We pick a theme an idea, and we all go through the same process, and everyone walks away with their little, you know, trophy of, you know, whatever they created.
So could we do that like as a company event? Like if we wanted to do our company Christmas party or something, and then we could have like Seventh Generation Games themed art or Aztec themed art?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I also create artwork on demand. So if you have an idea of what you want your team or your employees to do, I will definitely create a sample, and then we will work from there.
And then because we're a competitive game company, we judge each other against who's his best.
Oh, that scene sounds more fun.
I would totally lose.
So let's talk about going into business a little bit. I mean, you're a single mom. You've always had for, you know, a decade, a regular paycheck every month. And now all of a sudden, you just open up shop and say, hang out a shingle and say, here I am. What's that like?
Honestly, it's very scary. You definitely have to, you don't have to be crazy to do this, but have a desire, a goal, and passion to be able to put yourself out there. And, you know, I had a little financial savings, and I was able to make the decision to say, hey, you know, I want to do this. I want to do this for myself. I want to do this for my son. It's given me all different kinds of emotions just going through leaving this very secure job to venturing out on my own. But it's also given me some rewards, which I never thought of how that was going to play out. So, like, for example, one of them is I'm home now and I have a teenage son. And in my whole life of being a single parent, I've never had the opportunity to be home for my child as much as I'm home now. So I had a lot of resentments and guilt for myself as a parent because I wasn't the kind of parent that was home all the time. I worked all the time, and when I wasn't working, I was busy doing other things. And so being able to do this has given me this wonderful opportunity to kind of be there for my son, who I feel like is needing me more now as a teenager than when he was younger. I think it's just a great opportunity.
Does he appreciate that?
Believe it or not, he does. He really does. I think our relationship has gotten closer. He knows I'm home all the time. He reaches out to me when he needs something. And I feel like I'm making up a lot for lost time.
Well, and I have a question for you. So I was at this conference in India at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit. We were on the bus because we had a long time. You think LA traffic is bad. India traffic is really, really bad. But one of the other entrepreneurs said something, and I think those of us that were on the bus were in the conversation like, oh my God, you're right. And so he said, most people start a business because they have a real passion for it. So whether it's art, or he used cupcakes because it's a good example. And he said, you know, and your idea is I'm going to start a cupcake shop and I'm going to get to make cupcakes. But then really you start your cupcake shop and you don't really make any cupcakes. You make like one dozen cupcakes, and then all the rest of it is spent trying to get people to buy your cupcakes and building your website to sell your cupcakes and all of these other things. And
true.
I would say, have you found that to be the case? Because I know we certainly are living that every day.
Absolutely. You know, having the passion and being an artist is what drives the desire to do this. But the reality is yeah, for the last 20 years, I was in this secure job, and I was able to delegate certain responsibilities. If I had certain, you know, things I needed to get done, I had certain timelines, I knew what to expect. Taking this leap of faith and just jumping out there, and it all falls on me. And I feel like, you're right, just spending all the time that I've been spending in setting up shop and all of the responsibility of having to do that is beyond, it's something that it's hard to explain. So have I been able to go out there and have a million parties? And no, this is still the beginning phase. So I still, I feel successful that I'm even in this phase.
All right. And speaking of which, Adrienne is an artist. So you should go to her website, youcreateart.com. It's really beautiful. It puts ours to shame because Marie and I are not artists. Well, one of the other things that I've found, and I wonder if this happens to you too, is when I put so much pressure on myself because I feel like this company is riding on me, and Maria and Dennis, and you know, we've got children to support, and we have employees that count on us. And I set these goals that, you know, I want this game out by December 11th. And I'm just going crazy if, you know, December 9th comes and it's not ready. And then I realized the only person who said it had to be out by December 11th is me.
Yes. I spent my entire, this past year has been that way. I set up these almost unreachable goals, and then the amount of stress I cause myself to attain these goals is beyond my comprehension. You know, I get stressed out. I get upset. I worry that, oh, you know, my website isn't perfect, or I didn't get to accomplish these 10 things on my list that I wanted to do today. And then you're right, taking a step back and kind of looking at, okay, wait a minute. I'm doing this all on my own. I'm not having anyone else do anything else for me. I'm doing my own website. I'm doing my own marketing. I'm doing my own, you know, email blast. It's the pressure that I put on myself.
We'll be right back after this.
Want an easy way to brush up on your math skills? Did you wish you knew more about Latin American history? Did watching the Coco movie make you think that you are finally going to brush up on your Spanish language skills? Do you know a child who could improve the vocabulary? I have the answer for everything. Aztec, the story begins in the App Store for your iPad, free. Now, you and Maria and I, all three, seem to have done this at different stages in life. So I kind of want to ask both of you about this. So for me, I was not that mom that felt any guilt or resentment. Maria can vouch for this. I used to yell at those Disney shows where, like, the mom is on her cell phone while the kid's making the winning soccer goal, you know, and the kid is, that's why she's the big bully. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck that. You know, that kid can afford to go to that soccer camp because I'm going to bust her ass running that business, and that's why she's making those deals. So I didn't have that kind of guilt. But what I did feel like is I owed it to my children to give them a reasonable life. Like, they would have all liked, you know, a brand new Jaguar when they were going to high school, but at least to make sure they could live in a good neighborhood, that they had enough to eat, that they had decent clothes, that they could go to college. And so, yes, I started my first company when my kids were young, but it was very safe. There was a big demand for statisticians and statistical consulting and software consultants, and I did really boring stuff that paid well. And then when they were pretty much all launch or nearly there, I went and I started Seven Generation Games. Now, Maria did that when she had three little kids at home, and in fact, one on the way. In fact, two little kids and one on the way. You still have a son to get through high school and through college. So I would say the two of you took bigger risks. And to me, that's the part that I would feel really guilty about. And that's probably what I need to do. If like my company didn't make it and I couldn't send my kids to NYU, I would just feel terrible. So now that I put you guys on the spot, which of you wants to address that?
I don't feel guilty for making the choices of doing the things that I'm doing, because I think ultimately my son has had and will have a far better chance at success by seeing how not only how fearless I've been, how it's just there's a different way of viewing it. You know, I've managed to, you know, put my website up. I've managed to, you know, set up some parties. I've managed to, you know, I think I see them as successes. And if I were to fail, okay, if my success as an entrepreneur were to be met with failure, I think the lessons and the relationship and what I'm teaching my child far outweigh the guilt that I might feel if he's not, you know, having the nicest clothes or the fanciest, you know, things that maybe he has, you know, but he learns a different lesson. And sometimes life isn't easy. And that's the lesson you have to learn.
So. Yeah, I have a couple thoughts on that. I mean, first of all, I look at it as kind of like you talked about, my kids will see me doing things and trying things and understand that to get things, you have to work really hard. And that's something I worry a lot about, especially I taught college and seeing kids kind of come up not realizing how hard you have to work to get things. So I think that's a really important thing that it shows them. Also, you know, I think one thing, well, when I was having Ava, you know, and I had a, you know, moment of like, oh my God, what am I doing? Am I not ruining my life, but is my life over? And I think you were the person that, well, I don't think you were the person, Amory, that told me, look, there's never a perfect time. There's never going to be a perfect time to have a baby or to buy a house or to start another job or whatever it is. So you just kind of make it work around that and you kind of make now the time because there will never be a perfect time. You can just keep pushing it on and on and on. And, you know, we did go all into this, but I did in the back of my mind and, well, not, you know, and my husband and I had discussed this and I discussed this with you. And, you know, there is a drop, you know, point where we're going to go in all this, you know, we'll eat into this amount of savings and we'll go here, but we can't go below that, you know, because I, you know, am not going to be that person. I'm going to try really, really, really hard, but you can't, if you have a family, bankrupt your entire self and drain all of your retirement. You have to know if it's going to work or not. And that doesn't mean you give up on the days when it's rough, but you know, you're a statistician and it doesn't take even a statistician or rocket scientist to see if something's going in the complete wrong direction and it's dropping and basically the business is tanking, you know, yeah, there's the ups and downs, but if it keeps going down, you know, get off the sinking ship.
Right. Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Get off the sinking ship.
Right. Oh, I couldn't agree with you more when you said that. Just because I left the steady paycheck doesn't mean I would never take a steady paycheck in order to fulfill the success of my business. So absolutely, you have to know when to walk away and say, okay, you know what? I gave it my best shot. I did everything that I wanted to do. I showed myself that I could do it, and I gave an amazing. I think I was a great role model for my child, and you know what? I'm gonna go back to a steady paycheck because I want to put him through college. Who knows? Who knows?
And I can vouch for there being some value in more than monetary things to starting a business, even if you don't keep in that business forever. Dennis, my husband, as you all know, his father started a business for a few years when Dennis was young, and TVs were fairly new, and he did a TV repair shop where he would go into people's houses, they'd bring the TV in, and he would fix them. And when his dad died, about the only thing Dennis asked for was he wanted the sign that said DeMar's TV and Radio Repair, and we still have that. And he thought, and so did Julia, wow, that's a really great thing that Grandpa started a business. And she didn't say, oh, and it didn't become RCA or General Electric. She thought it was really cool that her grandfather took that risk and ran his own business. And Dennis, you know, went to UCLA and majored in math and physics and has been a software developer most of his career, and he tinkers with a lot of things and puts things together, and he got all of those kind of skills and interest in electronics from watching his dad in the shop. And so even if his father didn't become a mega millionaire, he certainly gave Dennis a lot of interest and confidence that he took on to, you know, get into a PhD program in particle physics at UCLA.
We'll be right back.
You can be too successful.
How so?
Our latest games have parents suggesting we get endorsements from YouTube celebrities, have professional gamers stream us on Twitch. They point out where we aren't the virtual reality level of Call of Duty.
Yet.
The point is, our games are so much more, well, game-like than the average educational games that people forget that what you really should be comparing these games to are math worksheets.
Yeah, I mean, you can have your kid sit down and do math workbooks for 20 minutes, if you can even get them to do that. Or you can let them play Fish Lake, which they'll probably ask you to let them keep playing after 20 minutes.
Or you can play yourself. You know you are never going to pick up one of those workbooks again for the rest of your life. Still, do you remember how to reduce fractions to lowest terms, multiply and divide fractions?
If not, play Fish Lake before Mia or Connor or Aiden or Joe gets home from school and ask for your help with their homework.
Welcome to the third, final, and most famous segment on More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games, presented by me, Maria Burns-Ortiz.
Actually, I'm Anne-Marie DeMars. It's not presented by Maria Burns-Ortiz. It's presented by Seven Generation Games, who provides all the hardware and software, but Adriana is presenting the trip, too.
Yeah, but this segment, I'm a presenter on this segment. If you were ever in Europe, they call them radio presenters and TV presenters and all of those things.
I don't get to go to Europe. You get all the trips like India, and I go to North Dakota and Missouri. By the way, I'm going to be in Missouri at the end of this month. You want to meet up? Holler.
I'm not going to be in Missouri because it's cold, but I'll be in Minnesota where it's also cold.
Colder, haha. Anyway, you want to give us a tip, Adriana? It could be on anything you want. Don't go to cold places. Any tip that you have that you know now, wish you knew then, think everybody should know, there you go.
So one thing that that I always hear as an art therapist is that, you know, oh gosh, I'm not really artistic. I don't know how to draw. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. And so my tip is, it's never really about the art. It's not about the product. It's about the emotion that is behind the product. So if you come into to an art therapist and you have that anxiety or that feeling, or if you're anything, it's not about the end result. It's about the process on how to get there. It's not about the art. It's about the emotion behind it.
I have an ancillary, if that's the correct word, question there, because I know you do art classes for children, and it's too late for my children. Sorry, Maria and Jennifer and Rhonda and what's her other name? Julia. But do you have tips for parents to encourage their kids' artistic ability? Or, yeah, so that they, even if it's not artistic ability, so that they like art. Do you have any suggestions for promoting art in your own home with your own children?
Yes. Always have art supplies available. Absolutely. You can't promote art if you don't have markers, paintbrushes, paper, canvases, clay, and tools for kids to explore. So absolutely. You want to encourage art, you need to provide the tools for kids to engage on their own. And I have never found a kid at this point who does not like to get a little dirty and make something.
It's the parental cleaning up part that gets me. I have a tip too. Everybody should buy Seven Generation Games, the perfect Christmas present for everyone you know.
That's right. Seven Generation Games. You don't have to clean it up. You won't step on it. You can download it. Those of you who forgot to get a Christmas present and, oh my God, my aunt lives in India or New Zealand, you can sponsor a school in her name. If your aunt lives in California, you could get her art lessons, or you could throw a party, Christmas holiday party. You create art.com.
Christmas isn't really huge in India, but if your aunt lives in India, like she said, feel free to donate a game for us.
You probably still like your aunt. Your aunt probably still likes education, right? We'll donate to a school in India, for sure. We also donate to a lot of schools on American Indian reservations. So if you'd like to sponsor a school, sevengenerationgames.com/buy. Click on whatever you want to donate. So that's it. Thank you very much, Adriana.
Thank you for having me.
Really quick, can we just drop this? Is it youcreateart.com with a Y-O-U, or is it one of those trendy...
It's a Y-O-U. Yeah, I wasn't that trendy. I wanted people to spell the word.
Yeah. That's right. We're not in tech speak.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, sevengenerationgames.com. And that's seven as in the number seven, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at sevengenerationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.